You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Transmissions from Atlantis, episode 105, The Fandom Awakens. After a long layoff, the Sith Lord JC and the Rebel scum Rita renew their love for all things Star Wars with this review of the blockbuster movie The Force Awakens. They also review The Husbands of River Song, the Doctor Who Christmas special. And now, JC and Rita.
Hey there, everybody. Obviously, you know from that music, we are doing episode 105, our Star Wars episode. Star Wars The Force Awakens was released this past weekend to record numbers.
And we've already seen it twice, and we'll probably see it more.
And by the time you actually hear this podcast, we'll probably have watched it the third time. At least the third time, maybe the fourth time. Who knows?
We'll see.
May the fourth be with you. We're also going to have our Doctor Who segment, where we're going to talk about the Christmas episode. But I'm going to be honest with you folks, the dominating portion of this podcast is going to be all Star Wars.
And just to give you a heads up, this is going to be a spoilerific fest of Star Wars.
Yes, we cannot emphasize that enough.
If you have not seen The Force Awakens,
do not listen to this podcast.
Period.
Because you will be spoiled. Because there are major, major things that we must talk about and that have to be discussed that is going to spoil the movie for you if you listen to this podcast and you haven't seen the movie yet.
You have been warned.
If you want to know if the movie's good, Rita, was it good?
It was awesome! Oh my god, I loved it!
I concur with that assessment. It was fantastic. You should stop listening to this podcast and go see it now. And when you're done, come back and listen to the rest of this podcast, because we're going to geek out on Star Wars.
Ah, yay!
And why are we wasting any time? Let's get right into it.
Yep.
Folks, so Star Wars and nothing but Star Wars. So before we get to the movie, let's talk about our little marathon that we did in preparation for seeing Star Wars The Force Awakens.
So we watched episodes 3, 4, 5, and 6, because 1 and 2 don't exist.
Yes, 1 and 2 do not exist in our universe, and let's just say that episode 3 is close to not existing in this universe, but we tolerate it because it actually is the only part of the prequels that actually have some elements that made Star Wars great.
Yes. Yes.
So then, of course, we go to the original trilogy, and we love the wonderfulness that is the original trilogy. And that, I think, got us ready. We were ready to go for Star Wars The Force Awakens.
We thought we were ready.
We thought we were ready, yes.
Let's be honest. We weren't ready.
Nope. And so, here's your final spoiler warning, because we're going to start talking specifics about this movie.
Very huge specifics.
Very, very major specifics. So, this is your last chance to press pause to stop.
And go see the movie.
To go see the movie and then come back later.
Spoilers. Spoilers. Spoilers.
Alright.
You've been warned.
You've been warned.
Here we go. May the force be with you.
Here there be spoilers.
Spoilers. Spoilers. Spoilers.
Alright, so the movie starts out, obviously, with a focus on Poe Dameron, who is this hotshot X-Wing pilot for the Resistance. Who are they resisting? This new order called the First Order,
That rose from the ashes.
That was the Galactic Empire.
Yes.
And these are your goose-stepping Nazi-type archetypes. You know, I mean, they are totally Empire.
And let's give a little bit more background, too. At this point, there is a new Republic now.
Mm-hmm.
That is now governing, you know, the systems.
Yeah, in the 30 years between Jedi and this taking place, they established the new Republic. Luke tried to set up a Jedi Academy. And, you know, they kind of built from the ashes of the Empire. Because the Empire kind of hung on for a little while, according to some of the Extended Universe stuff. And I'm talking about the new Extended Universe, not the one that has been exiled from canon. I'm talking about the new stuff that's written with the tagline, Journey to the Force Awakens.
Yes.
Star Wars Aftermath and a few other
There's novels, there's comics.
Yeah, basically there's a whole bunch of different elements that go into telling that story, although they don't get into the specifics of the principles, just so we know. We don't know how many kids Han and Leia have and things like that, so.
Well, obviously, there's got to be mystery when these movies start.
Yep. So we meet Lor San Tekka, who is this mysterious old... I first took him as a Jedi. But
because he was dressing almost like a Jedi, seemed kind of Jedi-ish.
And he talked about the Force, and he talked and he referred to the princess as general.
She'll always be royalty to me.
Yeah, she'll always be royalty to me. Exactly. So it was kind of like he seemed like kind of like a remnant of the Jedi. And I first thought maybe it was Kanan from Star Wars Rebels, but then we found out that his name was Lor San Tekka.
Well, Kanan could have been going by another name. We don't know. We honestly don't know who this guy really is.
Well, I've done some research.
Have you now?
I have.
Well, why don't you enlighten us?
So, apparently, Max von Sydow's character, Lor San Tekka, is a... I don't want to say bounty hunter, but he's kind of like a finder of things.
Hmm.
And apparently, in the years of the building of the Republic... He has, you know, found people, found information, found things that was important to General Leia. And
to reestablish the Republic.
And to reestablish the Republic.
Okay.
And apparently, we're going to learn about his backstory in Rogue One.
Ooh. Interesting.
So, okay. Which is the Star Wars spinoff movie that's going to be coming out next year. And is currently filming now. Even though that's supposed to be a prequel, so I'm kind of confused about why we would get his backstory in a prequel, but who knows. Anyway, so that basically gives you the backstory of where we start with Star Wars The Force Awakens. Star Wars The Force Awakens doesn't really give you any too much detail in what happened in those 30 years. Yeah. You either have to read the Extended Universe stuff...
Which we are totally going to do.
Which we are totally going to do. We haven't done yet, but we will. Although I did read the Shattered Empire comic series. Pretty good. Pretty good. Not bad. But it just jumps you right into the story. And let's just say, I talked to you about this before, and it's one of these things that I was a huge Star Wars fan when I was a kid. Loved Star Wars.
Oh, I was too. I think all of us were.
Yep. And I was so excited about the prequels coming out. You know, we're going to have new Star Wars, new adventures, and then...
Yeah.
That's basically the sound of the prequels. And I have to say that the Star Wars The Force Awakens has awakened something in me, and that is my love for Star Wars. The burning, crazy desire of...
Everything and anything Star Wars.
Star Wars related, exactly. And that's how good this movie was. It rekindled basically every single thing that I loved about the original trilogy. And a part of that is because it actually referenced back to the original trilogy, you know, where it had moments that were parallel or similar to the original trilogy.
As well as there were visual nods, a lot of visual nods, mm-hmm. to the original trilogy as well. Like, so, like, for example, the training sphere that Luke used in the New Hope movie.
Yep, there was also references to, you know, the trash compactor, and there's just so many moments in this movie that harken back to the original series that it was nostalgia for a lot of us, but at the same time, these were new stories, these were new adventures, and one of the big complaints that have been levied about the movie is that it was too much like the original Star Wars. And to me, that's the strength of this movie.
Yes, because the prequel trilogies were all CGI, the writing was bad, the acting was bad, the special effects were bad, everything was bad. Bad, 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 bad. So, yeah, we don't want the new movie to be anything like that. We want the movie to be like the original trilogy, because the original trilogy is what made us fall in love with Star Wars in the first place.
And in a way, this is kind of a reboot of the Star Wars franchise. So, to reboot it without having elements of the original trilogy is just foolhardy. You want to capture that magic that was there before, and I think they did a brilliant job. As you go through these different scenes, like when Rey calls the Falcon a piece of garbage, you know, and then you realize when they pan back that she's talking about the Falcon, and everybody in the theater goes,
"That's not garbage! What are you talking about?"
Those are the moments where you could tell J.J. Abrams is a true frickin' Star Wars fanboy, because he wrote a story that we all love.
Exactly. I honestly think that the best thing Lucas could have done was to transfer the franchise to Disney, to allow Disney to do it, because the prequels is what you get when Lucas had 100% free reign. And then look what we ended up getting. Disney, on the other hand, understood the fans and knew that they needed to go back to what was being offered in the original.
It was almost like Lucas tried to turn Star Wars into some kind of political drama.
Yes, and that's not what it is. It's no. Science fiction. It's adventure. It's action. I mean, yes, there might be a little bit of politics thrown in, but politics is not the main plot device
for
these movies. But then that's what Lucas was doing. And frankly, there were a lot of things that were sometimes even over my head with those prequels.
Yep, Star Wars is supposed to be a swashbuckling action adventure. That's what it's supposed to be.
Yes, in space.
Harken back to like the Flash Gordon stuff, right? Back in the day.
Or the old Buccaneer movies.
Yeah, or the old Buccaneer movies, the Errol Flynn stuff. That's what Lucas had set out to do. But he lost his way. And he, you know, what's funny is that apparently he's not too crazy about the new movie. And I understand it, because he wanted to continue the narrative of the boring crap of Star Wars that nobody cares about.
Yeah, instead of having all the action stuff.
So the decision that was made was the right decision, I think. And you know, you wanted to talk about some of the different characters that were in this. Kylo Ren, the baddie.
Well, let's leave Kylo Ren to the end, because that is going to reveal one of the biggest spoilers of the movie.
All right, just go ahead.
So let's start off first with Rey.
Okay.
Because she's the first real character. I mean, we see Poe, but we see him so briefly.
Mm-hmm.
The first real character that we get attached to in this film is going to be Rey.
Yep.
She is... There are so many similarities to her origins with Luke.
Mm-hmm.
Starts on a desert planet.
She was left behind.
She was left behind. She has no family. Even though Luke did have family, but he didn't have his parents.
Right.
So we see a lot of similarities with her and Luke. And... Somebody had asked her a question, well, why didn't she initially feel the Force? Luke didn't. Luke wasn't introduced into the Force until after he met Obi-Wan Kenobi. Yeah. And that's when he started, you know, being more attuned with the Force. So, yeah, it's very, you know, plausible that she's been on this planet all this time and be completely, be completely just...
Ignorant of the Force.
Ignorant of the Force and being completely blind about it.
Well, as far as she knew, the Force was just a myth, a legend.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, the Greek gods kind of thing, you know?
Exactly.
It wasn't like a real thing to her, so she couldn't believe in the Force. And one of the main tenets of the Force is that you have to believe in it to be able to do it.
Exactly. So, as a character, she just... I think it's a breath of fresh air that we're seeing a very strong female character other than Leia. Because other than Leia, there really wasn't any strong female characters.
Yep.
And to see Rey being more or less the star of the movie, to me, was fantastic.
Yep, and Daisy did a fantastic job as her. What I really enjoyed about Rey was her interplay with Finn.
Yes.
The Stormtrooper. They work together so well.
And that's another thing. Finn also works really well with Poe.
Yep.
Finn is just... really good.
And he worked good with Han, too.
Yeah, it's like, if you ever want to team up with anybody, team up with Finn. He's awesome.
And if you think about it, while Rey is really the hero of the story, Finn is kind of the center of the story, because it kind of all happens around him. Because he goes to that little village where Poe was at, you know, and he has his crisis of faith of being a stormtrooper in the First Order. It's him that springs Poe out. It's him that helps Rey escape with BB-8, you know, and then it's...
If it wasn't for Finn, the whole story arc wouldn't have even taken off.
Finn goes to the Death Star, to the Starkiller, to save Rey, and also, in the process, help blow up the Starkiller planet. It's all Finn. Finn's the hero.
So, let's talk about Finn for a little bit, because... a lot of people have been equating Poe as the new Han Solo.
Mm-hmm.
I don't agree
with
that.
Finn.
It's totally Finn.
Yeah.
Poe is a side character, in my opinion, because if you think about it, he wasn't in the movie all that much.
Yeah.
And what I love about Finn's background is that he comes from a background we've never seen in the Star Wars universe.
Yep.
Before this, before Finn, stormtroopers were just no-name cannon fodder.
Yep.
They were just there. They were just the troopers. They were expendable.
Yep.
But now we're seeing a different side of this.
Yep.
The original stormtroopers we know were clones.
Yep.
The original trilogy stormtroopers were not clones.
They were from Academy.
They were from the Academy, and they were still expendable.
Yep.
But now we have these new set of stormtroopers that are completely different. They are stolen from their families as babies. They are trained. They are conditioned. They are brainwashed to be stormtroopers.
Mm-hmm.
And this scares me more than any of the other stormtroopers.
Yeah. Because these are guys that aren't just, you know, clones or incompetent people, you know, that...
Can't aim at anything. They can actually shoot things.
They can actually shoot things, and they can kill things, and they are ruthless.
And they will blindly follow orders without question.
Yep.
Except Finn.
And here's the thing, though, is that they have a protocol for that, where if your stormtrooper starts to show signs of, you know, weakness
or nonconformity,
they go back to conditioning. Finn never went.
So get this. Here's my theory on the First Order. They're a cult.
They could be, yeah.
They're a religious cult now.
Well, we know the First Order arose from the Knights of Ren, who were a cult that worshipped the Sith Lords and the Empire. So we know that for a fact. And we also know that at some point, Supreme Leader Snoke, whoever the hell he is... somehow convinced Kylo Ren to turn against Luke Skywalker and his fellow Jedis and his family and wipe out the Jedis and join him as a Ren. Not as a Sith, as a Ren. And yes. That's an important distinction.
Because he's not a Sith Lord and he's not an apprentice.
Yep, he is a Wren. And there was a whole order of these Wrens. He's just the leader of the Wrens.
Well, here's another thing that never quite made sense to me. Because in the prequels, it was explained that there's always only one Sith Lord and an apprentice.
Mm-hmm.
But that's obviously not true.
Why?
It just doesn't seem copacetic because Count Dooku was also an apprentice.
Yeah, after Darth Maul died.
Yeah, but do you really think that... I think that Palpatine already had that guy, you know,
well, there's
in
always,
line.
There's always candidates, but he didn't have Dooku as his apprentice until Darth Maul was gone.
Yeah, I guess so. To me, it doesn't really quite make sense. But with the way it came out with the whole Knights of the Wren, now you can have...
As many apprentices as you want.
As many apprentices as you want, because you're not calling them apprentices. They're Wrens, right?
Yeah. They're basically the Order of the Wren.
Exactly.
Yep.
So Finn, you know, has now... This was his first battle, and you know, he did not want to blindly follow the order of killing all of these innocent villagers. He's like, no, I'm not going to do that.
Yep.
And they noticed.
Yep. They noticed. Phasma noticed, and Kylo noticed. He knew immediately.
Yeah, and so Finn was like, you know what? I need to get out of here, and I know a pilot.
Exactly. Exactly. And let me tell you, the escape scene was awesome. I mean, it was so exciting and action-packed, and it was old Star Wars, man, through and through.
So here's a cool little tidbit in case you didn't already know about this. Poe wasn't meant to survive.
Right.
The crash of the TIE fighter. He was supposed to die then.
Correct.
But I guess J.J. Abrams had liked his character so much that he wrote him into the rest of the movie and allowed him to continue on with the rest of the franchise.
Yep. And he will be a more important piece in Episode 8 and Episode 9.
Yes, which I really like because Poe was really awesome.
Poe, the actor that played Poe, Oscar Isaac, he added such, I guess the way that I say it, is energy to his role.
Yeah.
That you knew he was on the screen for the 10 minutes that he was on. You know... He wasn't in it a lot, but when he was in it, he was memorable. And that's something that I can't say about any of the characters, stars, or otherwise, in the prequels.
I agree. I wouldn't say that Poe made the movie, but he added something to the movie that...
He added energy.
Yeah, he had this energy about him that really added a lot to the movie.
So let's talk Kylo Ren.
Damn.
So... The thing about Kylo Ren is that you kind of expected him to be kind of like a Vader clone, and he was far from that.
Yep.
He came in as a badass, but in a way, it was all a peacock job. And what that means for people that have never heard that reference before is he was more bluster than he was bite.
Exactly.
And the thing is that I didn't like it at first. The first time that I watched the movie... I thought he was a wimpy Anakin, you know, wannabe puss boy. You know, kind of like Anakin was. But you convinced me, and the second time we watched it through, it changed my opinion of it.
Yeah, and so let me tell our listeners, you know, the point I had made. The difference between Anakin Skywalker and Kylo Ren. Kylo Ren is where Anakin Skywalker was right after Revenge of the Sith. So he's now Vader, he's still young, and he still has a lot of doubt. He's still fighting between that light and that dark. Now, the difference is, Anakin did not intentionally kill Padme.
Mm-hmm.
He did, but he did not mean to do that. We're about to give you guys a really, really big spoiler, so one more little warning.
Spoilers, spoilers, spoilers.
Kylo Ren intentionally killed...
His father.
His father, Han Solo.
Yes.
This is the key moment for Kylo Ren. Because he killed and he destroyed the one thing that still linked him to the light side.
Yep.
And he knew what he had to do in order to sever that link to go completely dark.
And that scene, oh my God.
Oh my God. I screamed in shock.
Yep.
That's how shocking that scene was.
And what was funny is that as much as you could see it coming, because you could see it coming from a mile away.
It was still shocking.
It was still the moment that, just the way that Harrison and Adam Driver played off that was just phenomenal, because Adam Driver's like, Kylo Ren is like,
I need you to help me fix.
I don't know if I can problem. Do what I need to do. You know?
Help me fix it.
And of course, Han Solo's character is playing it as if, oh, well, you know, my son's coming back. I can probably save him. And nope. Then everybody knew what was going to happen at that point. I know. Everybody knew.
Oh my God, we all saw.
But as soon as you see that saber go off and go through Han Solo, it's like, oh my God. No!
Yeah.
You did it! You son of a bitches, you did it!
I screamed in shock, and I sobbed, and I couldn't help myself. I felt like somebody I knew that was close to me had just been murdered in front of me. That's, yeah. That's how I felt.
It was devastating, and
It was heartbreaking.
And you hear Chewbacca just cry.
Here's the thing, there's only two times that Chewbacca has ever been that emotional.
Mm-hmm.
That it made you just want to choke back tears. The first is when Han was frozen in carbonite.
Yep.
And now again when Han was killed. Here's the main difference between Anakin and Kylo. Anakin was a whiny bitch.
Yep.
Kylo Ren, when you looked at his face, you saw that real struggle between that light and that dark.
Mm-hmm.
He was conscious of that struggle. He had temper tantrums, but those temper tantrums to me were absolutely scary because those were the times when he was in complete and utter just out of control.
Yep.
You don't know, you don't want to be in the same room with him. You saw those stormtroopers just backing
yeah,
up.
Yeah, they were like, oh, nope.
And that's the thing. Anakin was whiny.
Yep.
Kylo Ren is just completely out of control.
And in a sense, if you really think about it, Kylo Ren is stronger than Darth Vader because Darth Vader never allowed his love for Padme or for Luke to disappear.
No, and that's the thing. Vader was redeemable.
Yeah.
He was redeemable because he still had that small little smidgen of light still yep. inside him. Kylo? That man is dark. He's coming back.
Yeah, he's done. Yeah, he's done.
He's going to die, and he has to die.
He must die. But not yet.
but the thing is that he is absolutely probably one of my favorite characters in this movie.
He has a journey. That, you know, it was almost refreshing to see a flawed villain. You know, usually your villain is all powerful and your heroes have to drum up the strength to be able to beat them. And there was still that element to it, which we'll talk about later. But to get to that point, he was still a flawed villain. He had a weakness in himself. And one of the funny things that comes out of that weakness is that he's a Skywalker. So the Force is strong within him. You know, Leia is a Skywalker.
Yes.
But the weakness part came from Han, who has no in-touchness with the Force.
So he felt that by destroying Han's, not only are you severing that light side, but you're also becoming stronger with the dark side of the Force.
Exactly.
And it's also really, really terrifying how powerful Kylo Ren actually is.
But he's untrained.
Which makes it even more scary. Yeah. Which makes it more terrifying because of the fact that he is completely untrained. You don't know what he's going to do.
And now that he feels that weight of the light is no longer within him, and he can go to that next step to the dark side, completely commit to the dark side, then now, who knows what he's going to be capable of.
Adam Driver is a brilliant actor. Hayden Christensen is a hack.
I'm sorry, but
you're talking peas and carrots here. You're two completely different things. Hayden Christensen just did not do that role justice.
Yeah, and that's another big difference between the prequels and this movie, is a lot of the characters that were picked in the prequel were picked to be together.
Because they look good.
Because they look good together. They look good on a poster.
Not necessarily because they were talented.
It didn't mean they could act out of a paper bag, you know. You know, they were still, they were picked because they looked right. These young actors that nobody has ever heard of that are instantly superstars now.
Adam. Daisy.
John. Oscar, even.
It's like, whoa. I'm like, these people are brilliant. Thank you, Disney, for just taking the time and picking the right people.
Yeah, and they found, you know, excellent talent. You know, excellent talent. And these people can act, man. They're great. They're fantastic.
All right, so I think we depressed our listeners a little bit with the whole Han Solo stuff.
Yep, so let's go back to Rey, because we still have to talk about Rey's lineage. Because...
is she a Skywalker?
Or is she a Solo? And there are things... Thank you, Yoda. And there are things that kind of lead both ways.
I know. There's so many little hints, but you just don't know which way to go. And I don't think we're going to know until the next movie.
Obviously, we're not going to know until the next movie. But here's why I think she's a Skywalker. And we'll also do this for Solo as well.
Well, I'll tell you why I think it's a Solo.
Okay. Well, here's why I think she's a Skywalker. Number one, she reacts to Luke's lightsaber. And if you remember, Luke's lightsaber is also Darth Vader's lightsaber. So,
yeah. And yes, we are talking about the original lightsaber, the one he lost
when his hand got cut off in
the Cloud City.
Yep.
So it's like, where did this thing go?
Yeah. So, and that's another thing we'll talk about is how the hell did Maz get a hold of that lightsaber? But that's a whole, like she said,
that's a question for another day.
Yeah, that's a question for another day, exactly. So, it's almost as if that, and we know, if you want to go back to some of the cartoons, in Star Wars, The Clone Wars, there is a reference that says that, and even in Star Wars Rebels, I think, there's a reference that, the crystals within a lightsaber are in tune with the owner.
Yes, and if I remember, the crystals all come from various Jedi temples.
Mm-hmm, exactly. So, the fact that the lightsaber called to her and asked her to grab it, and then when she grabs it, she sees a Force vision. And we know it's a Force vision because Yoda told us, when you have visions, you can see the past, you can see the present,
and the future,
and you saw all three.
Yes, we did.
To the uber geekness of, we heard both Obi-Wans, both actors, Alec Guinness and Ewan McGregor, in that Force
and
ghost.
And Yoda.
And somebody
else we think might be Kylo Ren.
Right.
But that is going to go into my theory.
Yes, your thing. So that's one reason why I think she might be a Skywalker, Luke's child, right? Also, when she's with Maz and she's telling Maz, I don't want anything to do with it, and she storms off, Maz is kind of like, but you're, and she kind of sighs. And then everything else happens and we kind of lose track of that.
Exactly.
So to me, it's kind of like she was about to spill the beans right there. You're Luke's daughter. You're supposed to have this. This is yours. You know, this is from your grandfather to your father to you. And it goes back to also the trailer where Luke is talking about, my father had it, my sister had it, I have it, and you have it. She's a Skywalker.
And remember, those lines that were in the trailer...
never appear in the film.
Never appeared in the film.
Yeah. Because Luke Skywalker never talked, but that's a whole other thing we're going to talk about towards the end. Then there's another cue that, to me, makes her a Skywalker. And I think it's just JJ's way of kind of just giving us a hint, but not telling us outright. And that is, every time she uses the Force, you know, when she uses the Force against Daniel Craig's Stormtrooper, when she uses the Force...
which we'll also get into.
when she uses the Force... to grab
the lightsaber from the snow.
When she uses the Force to calm herself and ready for her last thrust against Kylo Ren, it's all Luke's Force cues. All of it. Every single time is Luke's Force cues. All
right. You've made some good points, but let's talk about how she could possibly be a Solo. Number one, she would still be attached to Leia, which means that lightsaber could still call to her, even if Luke wasn't her father.
Fair enough, yeah.
Right? Two, during her Force vision, when her as a little girl is being dropped off and left behind on Jakku, the voice talking was not Luke, it was not Han, it was not Leia. That voice belonged to Kylo Ren.
Mm-hmm. At least it sounded like it was Kylo Ren.
It sounded like it was Kylo Ren. Three, and this is the most important one right here. Every time... let me rephrase that. In the film, Kylo Ren had become obsessed with the girl.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as he found out that Finn had left the planet with a girl from Jakku, what girl?
He
lost it.
Yep.
He totally lost it. He's like, what girl? Mm-hmm. Because he knows who she is.
Yep.
As to why Leia and Han didn't know, is probably because she's going by a different name and didn't realize that was their daughter.
Or I have another theory to that.
Okay.
So the other theory is that what if she was a junior member of Luke's Jedi Academy? Right?
Mm-hmm.
And when Kylo Ren wiped out the Jedi Academy, they thought that she was killed as well. You don't go looking for somebody that's dead.
That is also true.
But if your theory on them being brother and sister is right, maybe Kylo couldn't bring himself to kill her, and he took her to Jakku.
And abandoned her in Jakku so that she would be out of the way and hidden, but not get in his way.
Exactly. So, I can see that.
There are really good points on both sides.
And there's also the one scene where they are, he's reading her mind and, you know, pulling out all this stuff out of her mind. And then she pushes back and reads his mind. But while he's reading her mind, he says, "You see Han Solo as the father figure that you never had. Sorry, you're going to be disappointed." You know, so it's kind of like, yeah, dad's a dick.
You know? Exactly, exactly. Exactly. That's why I think she's probably a Solo.
And a couple other points. He could have easily just killed her when they're in the forest and he's got the saber to her neck. Could easily killed her. But he doesn't do it. Then when they're fighting later on the Starkiller planet in the snow and he has her beat and he says, "I can complete your training." Why would he do that? Why would he care about this stupid scavenger girl that maybe she's a little bit powerful in the Force, but who cares?
Because, and maybe here's another little theory. Kylo Ren killed his father to kill off that little bit of light, but mm-hmm. What if he didn't completely sever that light because he's still somewhat attached to his own sister?
Yep, and now he has to try to turn her to the dark side to complete his trip to the dark side.
Which now harbors back again to Return of the Jedi. And Vader and Luke,
mm-hmm.
where Luke tried to turn his father back to the side of good,
yep.
and Vader was trying to turn his son into the dark side.
Yep, and it also explains off, you know, well, why didn't Han and Leia know that it was their daughter? Because if they think that she's dead, but they have connection to her, and they don't understand why, like Han all of a sudden offering her a job, but he doesn't know why.
It's like he totally wants to put her under his wing. And here's another thing that I don't think anybody has noticed, and I only just figured this one out today. At the end of the film, when they come from the Starkiller planet back to the Resistance after, you know, the planet's been destroyed and all that other stuff, Rey comes out of the Millennium Falcon and is immediately embraced by Leia, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
But guess what? This was the first time they were meeting.
Is it?
Yes, because she was kidnapped from Maz's planet.
That's right.
And then they went to the Resistance.
That is right. Oh my God.
And only then, at the end of the movie, did Leia and Rey meet for the first time. And they embraced.
Hugged.
And hugged like they were family.
Wow.
So you tell me that Leia ain't her mother.
That's right, because the only reference Leia makes to Rey is, Han told me about the girl.
Exactly.
But they never meet.
They had never met.
Until she is returned. You're right.
They had never been introduced, and they had never been met prior to that hug.
And how odd is it for them just to embrace like that? Wow.
Exactly. I don't think anybody else has really realized that.
No.
I only recall that today. I'm like, wait a minute. Holy crap.
Yep.
Okay, this is weird, because if they had known each other, then I would understand that embrace, but they don't.
Mm-hmm.
So that embrace almost doesn't quite make sense unless there's some kind of deeper connection there that has just not been revealed yet.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if even Rey understands it yet, but she just felt close enough to Leia to embrace her while they
How did Rey even know that was Leia?
I don't know.
Right? You think she would have just come out of that Millennium Falcon looking confused because she's in a new place and she knows only the people that were on board that ship.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Booyah!
So, another complaint that has been lodged against the movie is, how could Finn, a clumsy stormtrooper, handle a lightsaber going against Kylo Ren, who's supposed to be a powerful, not Sith Lord, but, Knight of Ren?
Well, I have a theory with that, too. If you remember on Maz's planet, when he, when Maz says, when he says, I don't have a weapon, and Maz is like, yes, you do, and has him use the lightsaber, there was a stormtrooper that had a lightsaber-esque mm-hmm. type of weapon. He would have been trained on that.
Mm-hmm.
Which is how he could use a lightsaber.
Point. Yeah, that's a great point.
I mean, he would have had training along with all the rest of the stormtroopers on all the various weapons.
Yeah.
And that's another point we need to make. The stormtroopers now have the equivalent of a lightsaber in order to be able to battle against Jedis.
Yeah. That's very, very true. And another thing that I also would submit to you is that I don't think Finn did too good against Kylo Ren. He was in a defensive posture the entire friggin' fight. He caught a couple lucky hits, but for the most part, he's running for his damn life.
Well, and it's to be expected.
Yeah.
I mean, Kylo's going to be a lot more powerful than he
exactly.
is.
Exactly. So
he got his butt kicked.
Yeah, so the people that say that, he held his own against Kylo, no, he got his ass whipped. And he also got his spine severed. That's not a win!
No!
That's a loss! That's a big loss.
He's lucky he's not dead is what's going on
here.
Yes. And as far as Rey using the lightsaber, you also got to remember, she's had this staff that she's also been using for a very long time, mm-hmm. and she knows how to wield it pretty well.
Right.
So she's just transferring those skills to the use of a lightsaber.
And the Force flowed through her. She's strong. And she was getting her butt kicked, too. Until
she found her intercom.
And why did she find her intercom? How did she know when Kylo says, I can train you in the ways of the Force, she says, the Force, and then suddenly finds her intercom. Why? Because she was trained by Luke as a child.
And she might just not remember it.
She doesn't remember it.
She just maybe remembered it subconsciously.
Right at that moment, yep. And then she started kicking his ass.
Yep. So, some of that had obviously retained. She knows her stuff. She is also, because of the way that she developed her skills in such a short span of time, tells me that in regards to her strength with the Force, she's stronger than even Luke.
Mm-hmm.
And she may be stronger than Kylo Ren.
Well, again, she hasn't been trained properly. Maybe not since, she was a little baby, right?
Yeah.
Or not a little baby, but a little, toddler or whatever. A youngling. But she remembered the old legends of the Jedi mind trick. And that's what she used against the Daniel Craig Stormtrooper.
Let's talk about that, by the way.
Okay.
Daniel Craig played a Stormtrooper in the movie.
Yep.
How freaking awesome is that? It was just one of those cameos that just happened because Daniel Craig was in the same sound studios filming Spectre, and he just walked on over to the Star Wars set, went up to J.J. Abrams, and he's like, hey, can I do a cameo?
Yep. Want to hear a funny geeky thing, too? On his armor, there was a number 7.
Yeah, I know. That's so awesome. And the fact that he had an interview with EW where he got an attitude about the whole rumor thing. And he's like, I would never do that. I would never be an extra in somebody else's movie, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And inside he's like, I totally did.
Exactly. You gotta love him for that, really.
Yes, exactly.
And he wasn't the only one that also cameoed in it. Also,
Simon Pegg!
Simon Pegg was the junkyard guy.
Yeah, the one giving out the portions of food.
Exactly.
That was Simon Pegg.
Yes.
And there were, like, a whole host of other people who just, like, sure, we'll do cameos.
Yep, snuck them in, right? Exactly. Apparently, so was...
Warwick Davis was apparently one of the X-Wing fighters.
Yep.
I don't remember seeing him. We'll have to, of course, go watch the movie.
Well, we'll watch it
again
in our third
and again,
or fourth
and again,
or fifth.
And again, and again, and I'm sure we'll catch him, but that's what I heard anyway.
Yep, so that covers that. But back to, I guess, what we were talking about with Rey is, I mean, those are examples of how these kind of these things can happen. She's very strong in the Force, and if I'm right, and she's a daughter of Luke, and who did Luke fornicate with?
Yes,
was it another Jedi? That is no longer
canon.
Yeah, was it another Jedi? We don't know. We'll find out. But if the mother and father are both strong in the Force...
Can you imagine what the progeny would be?
The progeny would be much more powerful than Kylo Ren is. Because Kylo Ren's progeny is a scruffy nerf herder and one person that's...
And if you remember, the whole part about being part of the Jedi's is that you're not allowed to marry, you're not allowed to, you know, procreate.
Right.
Well, there's obviously, if you think about it, a reason for that. If you have two Jedis that intermingle, what's to say you're going to have another Jedi that's going to be even more powerful and more dangerous?
Mm-hmm.
Which is why that would be a taboo kind of thing.
Yep. All right, so we talked a little bit about what happened with Han Solo. A lot of people that love the original trilogy are upset that Han died. Why do you think Han had to die?
In order for Kylo Ren's character to develop into more of that dark side, Han had to die because Han was his weakness.
Mm.
They made that very plainly clear.
Yep, I agree.
There are also things in the background on why Han had to die because Harrison Ford didn't really want to even come back to do this in the first place.
Yep.
And he wanted to have his out, and J.J. Abrams gave him his out. And frankly, I think this out was honorable, it was respectful, and it was well done.
Yep, I agree. And I don't really have anything to add to that. I think we've pretty much talked about that death and that scene and how important I think it was to the development of Kylo Ren, so I think that really answers that charge as to why that would be.
This is also... So, here's... I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Because this has had me a little stumped.
And if I know the question that you're about to ask, it's also a big complaint with some people that we know regarding...
Very big complaint.
Yes.
Okay. Why did we not see Luke Skywalker until right at the end of the film? And not only that, but he didn't even have any lines.
Yep. And there was an article that was out there that I agree 100% with. And really, I mean, it has to be, Luke could not be in that movie. And the reason why Luke couldn't be in that movie is because once you see Luke Skywalker, everybody else is secondary. You know, Everybody else is secondary. You're just focused on what's Luke going to do. And that doesn't allow Rey to grow. That doesn't allow Finn to become the semi-hero that he is. You know, it overshadows everything in the movie.
I don't even think Han's death would have been as impactful if Luke had come back earlier in the film.
I agree with that 100%. And according to one of the early screenwriters for The Force Awakens, they had Luke as a major part of this of The Force Awakens, and he just dwarfed it all. You know, it lessened the impact of Han being there, of Leia coming back, because it all was still revolving around Luke instead of revolving around the new generation.
Now, I know that there are some people that would think, well, for me, I would want Luke to be back And that would be, and that want, and some people want that to be their main focus. But when I saw the film, I'm like, all of the other characters got a chance to shine. Mm-hmm. If Luke would have been there early on, he would have shadowed everybody else.
Yeah. And one of the big things is that this is a passing of the torch. Because, let's face it, Carrie Fisher, Harrison Ford, Mark Hamill, they're all old generation.
They're not getting any younger.
They can't carry the movie. I mean, I'm not going to say that Mark Hamill can't carry the movie. He can definitely carry the movie. He's that level of an actor. But what I'm saying is mm-hmm. that you cannot continue the franchise basing it on an older person, on an old generation. You have to connect with the young generation. And that's what this was all about. Passing the torch. Exactly. And you couldn't do that with Luke Skywalker being a focus of this film.
I mean, Doctor Who has done it for decades. Mm-hmm. Where they're passing the torch from one doctor to another.
Yeah.
This is being... The torch is being passed from one Jedi to another. Now, we finally do get to see Luke.
Yep.
Right at the end of the film. We know he has no lines, even though he has lines mm-hmm. in the trailer.
Yep.
I honestly thought the ending was brilliant.
Yeah.
Because the look on his face spoke volumes.
Exactly.
He saw her. He saw the lightsaber. He recognized her.
He recognized the lightsaber.
He recognized the lightsaber.
Where the hell did you get that thing?
Exactly. He did have a look of surprise on his face. At the same time, I also wonder, when Han died, did Luke feel that?
Because Leia felt it.
Leia felt it. Luke must have felt it.
Yep.
So I think that because of the fact that he had that sad look on his face when we finally saw him, he was expecting her.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he was expecting her to be bringing his lightsaber.
Yep.
That he was not expecting. That was a surprise. But he was expecting somebody to come.
Yep.
And this goes... let's discuss the whole maps thing. A little bit.
Yeah, because that's another complaint.
The whole point is that he wanted to completely drop off the map and not be found, yet he left breadcrumbs?
Well, here's the thing, though. He wanted to find the original Jedi Temple. That's what he wanted to find. Yeah. And the map in question is mapped to all of the Jedi Temples.
So not necessarily a map to him.
Yeah, because if you notice, if you look at the map, you see there's a point here, a point here, a point here, a point here. So it's, you know, there's a whole bunch of areas where he could potentially be. And he's going through each of these spots until he found the first Jedi Temple. The one piece of the map that they were missing was a piece that showed where the first Jedi Temple was.
Which, of course, now we have the mystery of why that piece of the map was missing. How did Lor San Tekka had it in the first place? Where did he get it from?
Mm-hmm.
And how did all of that came about?
Well, that goes back to his backstory, where he's apparently a finder of things. So,
yes. And now it's like we get to the end of the film and we're like, wow. When we saw it that Thursday night, it was an emotional roller coaster. Mm-hmm. The only time I've ever felt that emotionally drained was when we watched Deathly Hallows Part 8 during a convention with hardcore Harry Potter fans.
Mm-hmm. And part of that was because we were with hardcore Star Wars fans who were oohing and aahing at every single scene.
And screaming in shock and crying and oh my god.
Yeah, so you get out of that movie and you're just drained. Watching it again with a less Star Warsy crowd, it wasn't as emotional. But I was able to get a lot more out of the film because I was actually able to hear the dialogue. I was able to see a lot more of what I didn't see before.
It's like we were able to absorb more of the content.
Yes.
When we watched it the second time around, which made me love the movie even mm-hmm. more.
Yeah, even the second time around, you notice so many things that you missed the first time around, like R2KT.
Yes, we totally missed her the first time around, and this time we actually saw her twice.
For those of you that don't know who R2KT is, Dr. Geek's lab actually had the creator of R2KT on his show, and he's a member of the 501st.
Yes.
And it's a very sad story because his daughter Katie loved Star Wars and wanted her own R2-D2.
To watch over her while she was in the hospital.
Dealing with her cancer.
Yeah.
And so... he actually started building R2KT. and
made, which is supposed to be an R2-D2 version, but pink.
But pink, yeah, because that was her favorite color. Unfortunately, she passed before he could finish.
No, but remember that a member of the 501st donated an R2 unit that they went ahead and painted pink.
Yes.
So that she can at least have one in her hospital room.
Yes.
And then he did complete the other build after she had passed.
Yep.
And they've been using that build for charity events.
Yep.
And she has now made cameos in The Force Awakens.
Well, she was also she also cameoed in
Rebels.
Star Wars Rebels. Mm-hmm. And I think in Clone Wars.
I'm not sure about Clone Wars, but also she also has her own action figure now as well.
Yeah. So you can see R2KT as when Poe's leaving his X-Wing the first time and he's running to greet Finn.
Mm-hmm.
R2KT actually goes underneath his X-Wing. Yes. Well, you can see her in the background going underneath the X-Wing.
And you see her the second time after the when the movie is almost over and they go back to the Resistance
base. Yeah, after they've destroyed Starkiller Planet, or Starkiller Base, whatever the hell it's called. When they're coming back and you see everybody kind of, you know, greeting each other and everything, you can see her come up.
Yes. By the way, what is it with the Empire's obsession with round things? First, we have Death Star 1, then Death Star 2, and now the Starkiller Planet, which is essentially the same thing, except just a lot bigger and more powerful.
Well,
can we come up with a new weapon?
The Starkiller Planet was kind of awesome, though.
It was awesome.
Because it was built within a planet, and it's not really a base, so it can't really move around. It just pretty much stays where it's at, but it sucks out the power of its star and shoots it across the galaxy to specific points.
So
and destroys everything in its wake.
So instead of the Death Star that can only destroy one planet at a time, you have the Starkiller Planet can destroy whole systems at a time.
Yes.
And that was just darn scary, which means if this is the best they've come up with at this moment, what are they going to come up with next? Because...
Well, that's the big question now, is now that the Starkiller base was destroyed, assuming with most of the First Order with it, where do they go from here?
Not to mention the whole government as a whole. Coruscant has been destroyed.
Well, was it Coruscant, or was it...
Well, we don't know. It looked like Coruscant.
It did look like Coruscant.
We know the original Republic was housed in Coruscant, so we figured the New Republic was, too.
And we know the system that they mentioned was Coruscant's system, so...
Yeah.
But we don't know if that was Coruscant, because it was never named Coruscant. And they didn't reference it at all in the movie as Coruscant.
No, they did not.
They just referenced it as the Republic's been destroyed.
We know that the Republic's been destroyed. We know a good portion of the First Order has now been destroyed.
Yep.
So there's this massive vacuum.
Yep.
And here's something that I thought was rather weird. Leia. After the ending of Return of the Jedi, when they're building the New Republic, why didn't she get into the politics? I mean, she's a princess. She's a natural born leader. Instead, she continues on with a resistance cause.
Well, the resistance, I think, was created to fight the First Order. And if you remember, when Han and Leia are talking about Kylo defecting, right?
Mm-hmm.
He says that he had to deal it with in his way, and go back to doing what he knows how to do. And she says, I did the same thing.
So in other words, she probably left the Republic and
she knows how to fight. She's a fighter. So so she volunteered as General Leia to go and fight the First Order.
And here's another thing. Why did she not train to be a Jedi?
That's a good question. I don't know.
I don't get that. I mean, you know, maybe because she is Luke's twin sister, but maybe she has some connections to the Force, but she's just not as strong with the Force as Luke is.
It's possible. It's possible. And I guess the next question is, we know that Rey went to Luke, and she's with Luke. We're assuming that Luke's going to be Yoda and train her, yes?
Of course. Be the assumption? He's the only Jedi left at this moment in time.
And we know that Supreme Leader Snoke also called back Kylo Ren to complete his training. So, I guess...
Dark side and light side training montages in the next film.
Dueling training montages, yes. So it should definitely be interesting to see how they do that. For those of you that don't know, there's going to be a lot of Star Wars over the next few years. The next movie is actually not the continuation of this story, but kind of a prequel, which is called Rogue One, A Star Wars Story.
Which takes place between the original trilogy and the new franchise.
Right. Or is it before the original trilogy and the prequels? I still haven't gotten a full understanding of that, whether it's in the Rebels timeline or if it's... Because what I've heard about it is that this is the story of them stealing the plans to destroy the original Death Star.
Hmm.
That's what I've heard it's going to be about. Now, obviously, that puts it in the Rebels timeline, Star Wars Rebels timeline. Or it could be, like you said, between Jedi and the Empire. Yep. So we're not sure, right?
Yep. There's a lot of possibilities, and not much has been said about that film. And then, of course...
So that comes out next year.
2017, Episode 8.
Yeah, Episode 8, the big one.
And it's already been confirmed that everybody that was in this cast is back in the new cast.
Yep.
And they said everybody.
Yep.
Which also makes me question Harrison Ford.
Is Han dead? Are we going to see him in flashbacks? Are we going to see him as a ghost? Even though he's not strong with the Force, he can't be a Force ghost.
No.
But is he somehow haunting Kylo Ren's memories?
See, when they say that the full cast comes back, that really doesn't tell you much. Sure. It doesn't mean that the character is going to come back, because we've seen situations where they say so-and-so, you know, the actor is coming back, but we only see them in flashbacks.
Yeah, that's what I just said.
Yeah.
I just said that.
I know you just did. I'm just reiterating.
Okay.
Shut your hole.
You shut your hole.
Shut your pie hole.
And then, in 2018, is the Han Solo prequel.
Ooh. And this will take place between the prequels and the original trilogy.
Yes. So that definitely is going to take place, and it's not really going to be a Empire Star Wars kind of story. It's really going to focus on Han Solo as the smuggler.
Space pirate,
yeah, basically. So that should be a fun adventure, and it'll be interesting to see who they get to play Han Solo. I'm hoping it's Chris Pratt, but...
Oh, I want... nah, Chris Pratt's too old looking for that.
I don't think so.
Or
I think he'd be great.
We'll have to see.
Although in 2018, he may be too old for it.
Well, they could already be filming that for all we know.
For all we know, yeah. And then in 2019, Episode 9, which wraps up this trilogy of craziness.
Yeah, so we have a lot of Star Wars to look forward to. We have the new Star Wars land that's going to start construction next year. Yep.
And the expanded universe, the new expanded universe that deals with the Force Awakens universe... is still going to be trudging up. I've heard that there could be as many as 20 tie-ins. So, within novels and comics and everything else, that are all canon.
Yeah, so let's make this very, very clear. Anything that was published in regards to comic books and books prior to The Force Awakens, you know, based on the old trilogy before Disney...
Mm-hmm.
None of that is canon.
Unless it's tagged with Journey to the Force Awakens.
Yes. Anything that's now being released by Disney is all considered canon.
Yep. So, you know, books like Splendor in a Mind's Eye, the stuff where Luke had his wife and a child, and...
None of that is canon.
Han and Leia had two kids, one named Jason, who turned to the dark side,
None of that is canon anymore.
Although they did kind of use that story a little bit. His name wasn't Jason Solo. It was Ben Solo.
Yep.
Which I kind of like that as well, because Ben Kenobi, without Ben, they would have never met.
Yeah.
Because
exactly.
Ben is the one that sought out the pilot at Mos Eisley.
Yep. So for those people who are really disappointed, you know who you are.
Yep.
That... Luke did not have any lines, and he showed up very briefly at the end of the movie. I think we're going to be seeing a lot of Luke in the next film.
Yep. And, you know, maybe Han's not completely gone. And for those of you that are upset with the expanded universe being cut out, I think there are going to be pieces of the expanded universe that are pulled back in, maybe renamed, maybe repackaged. But some of the similar storylines are going to be put into the story going forward. I don't think you're going to be completely neglected. J.J. Abrams is a huge Star Wars geek just like you are. He is not going to completely ignore you. He may have made that sever because he wants to create his own expanded universe, but that doesn't mean that he's going to completely ignore that line. He's already shown it, because Kylo Ren is the one that destroyed the Jedi Academy, and he's the son of Han Solo, just like Jason Solo in the stories.
Yep, exactly. So, oh my god, we have so much Star Wars to look forward to. It's awesome. We've got more Force Awakens to look forward to, because I know we're going to continue watching that movie in theaters.
And, of course, there's a rumor out there that there's 20 minutes of deleted scenes.
Yes.
So,
whether it's actually completed scenes or not, we don't know yet.
But what is in that? That is the question.
Yep.
And will it give us any more light as to what possibly could be going on?
I think we've gotten to a point where I think we've talked about everything we really wanted to talk about.
Yep.
Maz. Is she related to Yoda?
She could be. She could be the same species. And she's strong with the Force. And she kind of knew that Rey had some kind of connection to Luke's lightsaber. Whatever that connection was, we don't know yet. We'll find out. But
yep.
I think it's plausible. Definitely plausible. I don't think there's a point in rating it.
Oh, no.
You guys know we're crazy about this movie. It was...
I mean, giving it a rating is just wouldn't do it.
I got a better idea. Let's go one better.
Okay.
Where does it rank in the Star Wars movies?
Oh, my God. That's a toughie, because...
Well, give your rankings as they stand today. What are your top 6 Star Wars movies? I'll give mine first. How about that? My number 1 is Empire. My number 2 is the original Star Wars. My number 3 is Jedi. My number 4 is Episode 3, The Revenge of the Sith. My number 5 is Episode 2, and my number 6 is Episode 1.
Okay.
What's your order?
Mine is going to be the same as yours, except I'm switching Empire with Return of the Jedi. Return of the Jedi would be my first.
Okay.
Then Empire, then Original, then Episode 3, and then 2 and 1.
Okay. So where would you put The Force Awakens?
Oh my lord. I don't know how much bashing I'm going to get for this, but I'm putting it in number 1.
Really? Wow.
Because this movie has reawakened my love for Star Wars.
Hmm.
And let me tell you why, and I know you're probably not feeling this the same way I am.
Maybe, maybe not. We'll see.
I was really, really super young when the Star Wars original trilogies came through.
Mm-hmm.
I was born the year the original Star Wars came out.
Right.
Empire Strikes Back only came out a few years after that, so I was, what, 4?
Yep.
I never saw that in theaters.
Mm-hmm.
And even when Return of the Jedi came out, a few years after that, I was still too young. My family didn't have that much money. We did not ever really see it in theaters.
Mm-hmm.
So I always saw it piecemeal, and eventually saw it, you know, all at once off of VHS tapes.
Mm-hmm.
I did not have that impact that others did when they went to go see that in the theater for the first time.
Right.
Then you get the prequels. The big piles of Is that going to reawaken my love for Star Wars?
No, not really. Yeah.
Not really. This movie had me at the edge of my seat. Now I know what it felt like for people to see Star Wars for the first time in 1977.
Yeah, and similar for me as well. And I think because of that, I'm also going to put it at number 1. And
High five.
And here's my reasoning why I put it at number 1. Because I too was too young to remember the original trilogy. The first movie I remember ever going to was Empire Strikes Back, because my mom took me to go see it. My father says he took me to see Star Wars, but I was too young to remember that. I was like 4 years old, you know. I have no memory of it, right?
Yeah.
Like you, seeing The Force Awakens helped me understand the passion and the craziness that people had in regards to Star Wars. I couldn't get that from the prequels. You know, I got the feeling of it in the lead up to the prequels, but once the movie came out and everybody was like, meh. You know, then I was kind of like, you don't feel that excitement that Star Wars generated.
Or that passion.
Or that passion, right, exactly. So, that's also part of my reason. But here's another reason why I put it at number one. My previous number one was Empire Strikes Back. And the reason why it was my number one was because it had that I am your father moment. And it also had that epic lightsaber battle between Luke and Darth Vader.
Yep.
You had the I am your father moment when it's revealed that Kylo Ren is Han's son. You have the epic, not one, but two lightsaber battles between Kylo and Finn and Kylo and Rey. So you got two for the price of one. Plus, you have the throwbacks to Return of the Jedi when they fly through the Star Destroyer. Plus, you have the excitement of seeing all your old characters back again. You know, that nostalgia that bring you straight back to your childhood and seeing that they're still alive, for a little while at least, and they're still wonderful as they always have been.
Exactly.
Han Solo's still out there doing craziness and smuggling and getting himself into all kinds of trouble. Leia's still fighting a good fight. It's all still out there. And then you have Han's death. Which is, for me, there are very few things that I cry in movies about, right?
Yeah.
One of them is Connor McLeod's death in Highlander, because I love Highlander to no end, and when Connor McLeod dies, I just bawl like a little bitch. And I have to tell you, I felt it. And I had heard the rumors way back that Han Solo dies. I heard the rumors. So I was kind of prepared for it, you know what I mean? The moment had been prepared for. But when it happened, it was such a sudden and traumatic thing that it just left this impact on me that it was just, wow. Han's death is an allegory to Obi-Wan's death, but it was such more dramatic because Obi-Wan sacrificed himself for Luke to be able to take his next step into the Force, right?
Mm-hmm.
Han wasn't sacrificing Han was trying to save his son, bring his son back to the good side, to the light. And he was completely shocked when his son stabbed him with the saber. But he still loved his son enough to cradle his face.
Yes.
As he dies.
Yes.
Oh my God!
It's like, you know what? I still forgive you.
Yeah. And it's that kind of acting from Harrison Ford, the acting of everybody, all the new kids, the old guard, all the action and everything that made Star Wars great. And another great thing was J.J. going back to practical effects and not using too much damn CGI.
Yeah, you know? Minimal CGI was put into this film. Yeah. Everything from the cockpits to BB-8,
mm-hmm,
was real.
Practical. It was all practical. Even the ships were practical for the most part.
They went back to the building the models and
all looked that. Right. Everything looked right. Even when they're on the Star Destroyer and you see the Star Destroyer bay, it looked right. That's why The Force Awakens for me is number one, because not only did it capture all the things I loved about Star Wars early on in my childhood, but bringing everything else into it with all the dramatic scenes that happened to it, it was just an amazing frickin' movie. And one that I will watch again and again and again.
Yeah. So, here's my take on it. Whoever signed off on the movie title, The Force Awakens, you realize it wasn't just a force that was awakened.
It was our fandom.
It was our fandom that was reawakened.
It's okay to love Star Wars again. It is.
Exactly. Yeah. Now you have the old generation loving this film. You're now bringing in this new generation that can't get enough of it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just going to go on for the next 100 years.
We hope. As long as George doesn't get his hands on it again.
Oh, you know he won't.
And you know, let's make sure that we have everybody understand. We love George Lucas. If it wasn't for him, Star Wars would not exist. It is his creation. I just think that he lost his way.
And the direction he was taking it was a direction that was not appealing to the fans.
And the thing is that he got so emboldened by it, he didn't care what the fans thought. He wanted to make his films, and the fans were going to like it or not, and he didn't give a f***. And I think Disney and J.J. Abrams, as a Star Wars fanboy, took it back to the fans and made movies for the fans. And, you know, if you're a Star Wars purist and you love the old films, I find it difficult to understand anybody that could not enjoy this movie.
Disney didn't even put their logo in front of that movie.
Yeah, it was just Lucasfilm.
That's how determined and how involved they were in this in regards to the fans, that it came, the order came from up high that we're not going to put this in front because it's just going to take away from the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
First thing you see, Lucasfilms.
Yep, as it should be.
The only thing I missed
was the
20th Century Fox fan logo.
Fanfare, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, so... So that, folks, is The Force Awakens. If you haven't seen it yet, and we've spoiled it for you, we gave you a billion warnings. It's your own damn fault.
That's right.
And if you have seen it, go see it again, because you're going to see a whole bunch of stuff that you missed the first time around.
Are you kidding? We've seen it twice, and I know I've still missed stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And so, coming up next, we're going to talk Doctor Who Christmas Special, and it's going to be a great one, we hope. Or was it? We'll tell you.
Hello, Dr. Geek fans. I'm Penny.
And I'm Sheldon. And we're here to tell you about Dr. Geek's Lab, the science of music from fiction.
It's the soundtrack album from Dr. Geek's Laboratory of Applied Geekdom.
Here's the rockin' version of the main theme by Point Lagrange and the Trojan Moon. Here's an instrumental called The Same Song.
Listen to this instrumental version of I Can Live With It.
Dr. Geek himself sings in this song, Creature's Rhapsody.
I see a little lab creature, not a man.
Strap him down, use him for everything we can.
Dr. Geek and Mr. Flask, very, very frightening.
Wow, Dr. Geek sings.
Here's a little bit of the track, It's a Geeky Crisis.
Why don't you listen to the soulful melody of Gloomsday, Sheldon? Here's a song that will raise your spirits. Apply your geekdom, Flask. That's right, folks. This amazing album is available right now at iTunes,
Amazon.com,
CDBaby.com,
and anywhere you buy digital music online.
Don't forget, Sheldon, it's also available as a physical disc in select locations. Get your copy today.
This is Gareth David Lloyd. I play Yanto in Torchwood, and you're listening to Transmissions from Atlantis.
And we're off! Fingers on buzzers! Are you feeling lucky? Are you ready to play the game? Who's going to be quickest? Who's going to be luckiest?
This is not a game!
No, it's not a game, sweetheart, and I mean that most sincerely.
Why are you doing this?
Yes, I'd quite like to know that, too. You set this up. Why?
Because it's not a game, Kate. This is a scale model of war. Every war ever fought right there in front of you. Because it's always the same. When you fire that first shot, no matter how right you feel, you have no idea who's going to die. You don't know whose children are going to scream and burn. How many hearts will be broken? How many lives shattered? How much blood will spill until everybody does what they're always going to have to do from the very beginning? Sit down and talk! Listen to me, listen. I just wanted to think. Do you know what thinking is? It's just a fancy word for changing your mind.
I will not change my mind.
Then you will die stupid. Alternatively, you could step away from that box. You could walk right out of that door and you could stand your revolution down.
No. I'm not stopping this, Doctor. I started it. I will not stop it. You think they'll let me go after what I've done?
You're all the same, you screaming kids. You know that? Look at me. I'm unforgivable. Well, here's the unforeseeable. I forgive you. After all you've done, I forgive you.
You don't understand. You will never understand.
I don't understand. Are you kidding? Me? Of course I understand. I mean, do you call this a war, this funny little thing? This is not a war. I fought in a bigger war than you will ever know. I did worse things than you could ever imagine. And when I close my eyes, I hear more screams than anyone could ever be able to count. And you know what you do with all that pain? Shall I tell you where you put it? You hold it tight. Till it burns your hand. And you say this. No one else will ever have to live like this. No one else will ever have to feel this pain. Not on my watch.
Folks, you know that music, and it is time for
Doctor Who.
Doctor Woo. Who. And
Woo.
Are you done? And it may be the last time we see Doctor Who for a while, if the rumors are true, and we won't have Doctor Who in 2016,
which would really, really, really be very bad of Stephen Moffat.
Yeah. Apparently, there are scheduling conflicts because he's doing Sherlock this year. And because of that, the production schedule for Doctor Who has been pushed back. And there's no telling when BBC plans on airing these episodes. They will be filmed this year, this coming year. But we don't know when they're going to air. It may start with the Christmas special.
Can you imagine that if we would have back-to-back Christmas specials and nothing in between?
Well, it's happened before.
Yeah, but eh. I mean, I can imagine that Tenant year where all they had was specials throughout the year.
Yeah. It would suck, but we'll see what happens. In any event, this is Peter Capaldi's second Christmas episode. Well, I guess technically the time of the Doctor he appeared.
Yeah, but that doesn't really count.
No, not really.
That doesn't really count. Last Christmas was officially his first Christmas special.
Yep. And this one is The Husbands of River Song, and I have to say,
one of the better Christmas specials for Doctor Who that we've had in many years.
What part of I have to say do you not get?
I just beat you to it.
And yeah, pretty much it's one of my favorite Christmas episodes ever because we finally get the question answered, when are we going to see the last scenes of River Song? Right before she goes to Silence in the Library. It was kind of hinted at in a webisode that never aired on television, but is on the Blu-ray set and was aired online on iPlayer. But
And I'm glad it wasn't made official because it's not...
No, it's canon. It was filmed, it was canon.
Yeah, but it was still with Matt Smith's doctor, so it didn't make sense, since now that scene takes place with Capaldi's doctor.
Right. Well, they actually addressed that during the during the little conversation between River and the Doctor.
Yes, they did.
But well, we'll get to that in a minute. Let's just start at the beginning of the episode, where we had a madcap caper. River's always getting herself into trouble.
Of course.
And what did you think of the... I don't know what you want to call him. You can't call him headless because he has a head, but...
You mean the robot?
The robot with the head.
He kind of reminded me a little too much of the robots that we saw in Dinosaurs on a Spaceship.
Yeah, but they didn't have human heads. And the head of King Hydroflax, the destroyer, the evil, the guy that we've never heard of until now.
I don't know what to make about the villain. I don't really think this episode was really about the villain. The villain was more of comic relief, to be honest with you.
Yeah. And I have to say that if the guy was as bad as they were saying he was, destroyer of systems and whatnot, I think the Doctor would have probably taken care of him at some point. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't know.
His backstory was kind of BS to me. Because we've never heard of him, and basically, you know, he's this invention just to push the story along.
Yeah, exactly. He wasn't really credible as a villain. Like I said, I think he was just there as filler.
Yeah, he was there because as, the like story, you said, comic relief.
Yeah, he was there for comic relief. A villain that's meant for comic relief, because the story was really all about...
River not knowing the Doctor.
He just wasn't credible as a villain. He was there for comic relief. The story was really just about the Doctor and River.
Yeah.
And I'm glad it worked out that way, because I didn't want it to be about the villains. I wanted the story to be about them.
Yep. Agreed.
But...
And really, the story was the Doctor trying to convince River that he's the Doctor.
And there's the thing, is that throughout the story, you didn't know if she actually didn't think it was him, or she actually did think it was him, and she was just kind of messing with him the whole time.
Yeah, we didn't know until, like, the last bit, when she's going on her rant about, you know, loving a monolith and all this other stuff.
Yeah, you can love the sunset, but the sunset's not going to love you back, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm. And then when she finally realizes it's the Doctor, and he's like, and she's like, you have to do your roots, and he's like, what? The sunset has to do roots? And she's like, oh, shut up! It was pretty funny.
It was. It was a typical moment where she just finally realized who she really was talking to.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, oh, crap.
Yeah.
You're actually here, and now we're in big trouble.
Yep. But of course, they get out of it, and then it sets up the... gut-wrenching scene at the end with the singing towers, which we've known was going to happen at some point. And damn you, Moffat, for making us cry on Christmas again.
But it really was a beautiful scene. And I loved how at the end she's like, so how long is a night on Deryllium? And he's like, oh, 24 years. And she's like, I hate you.
And of course he responds with the classic, no you don't.
So, I think that final scene was everything I expected to be. I definitely want to buy the soundtrack to that particular episode.
Mm-hmm.
And we've only ever bought one other soundtrack, which was the Christmas Carol episode.
Yes.
But this one, I think the music at the end was really beautiful.
It was. I just really enjoyed the interplay between Alex Kingston and Peter Capaldi. I think they are a match that felt right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, I never really bought the River and Matt Smith, because Matt Smith is so much younger than her. It almost... I mean, there's nothing wrong with, you know, an older woman liking a younger man, but it was just kind of like a... It just never sat right with me. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I do kind of agree with you there. But it also makes me sad, because I have a feeling this is probably the last time we're going to see River.
Not necessarily. Well... It may be the last time we see River on television, but it also sets up a whole bunch of Big Finish episodes.
Yeah.
With her and Capaldi when Capaldi's done.
It's going to be one of those things where...
24 years, man.
Well, not just 24 years. It's just the fact that, chronologically, they're not going to have that much time together.
24 years, that's a pretty long time.
Yeah, 24 years on Deryllium.
Yep.
But what kind? How many Big Finish audios are you going to have on Deryllium?
Well, he does have a TARDIS. He can take her off wherever he wants and just keep coming back to that night.
In this situation, I don't think that works that way. I mean, he's just going to be avoiding a fixed moment in time.
Yeah.
Kind of like he did with Lake Silencio.
But it's 24 years, so, you know, he can do that.
Yeah, I guess so.
Hey, if freaking Zombie Girl and, you know, Immortal Chick can run off in a diner for for all that time, then why can't River and the Doctor run off for a while?
Well, yeah, I mean, that is true. I guess I can see it happening. I mean, even off and on, I mean, Rory and Amy travel with the Doctor off and on for like 10 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what's to say that River can't do that with Capaldi's Doctor for the next 24 years?
Yeah, exactly.
Until it's time.
Exactly.
But the whole point, well, but she, it all goes back to the verbiage. She says the last night we spent together.
And a night on Deryllium is 24 years. So, she has 24 years with him. I want to think of it that way, even if they never show it on television. And that also opens the door to allowing her to come back at some point.
Yeah, I guess so.
So.
All right. We'll go with that.
All right, so let's wrap up this episode. What do you want to rate it?
I think I'm probably going to rate it kind of between an 8 and a 9. I love the interplay and the story between River and the Doctor. I just didn't like the whole villain stuff.
I did. And I'll give it a 9 because I really enjoyed the comedy with the villain. I thought he was funny. The whole bag scene where the bag is shouting at him was hilarious. this wasn't meant to be a darker episode. It was supposed to be fun, lighthearted, and it showed...
And a little sad.
And it was also kind of nice seeing the Doctor laugh a little bit, you know, because he's been such a grumpy Doctor.
Well, how about that one scene towards the beginning where he finally gets to be on the other side and act like, oh my God, it's all bigger on the inside.
Yes, that was awesome. Yes. And he says...
She should have caught on then, to be honest.
And he's like, I just wanted to hear it done properly. Yeah, so there was a lot of lighthearted moments in this episode. It was a very enjoyable episode. And then the scene on Deryllium was just gut-wrenching at the end. And when he presents her the sonic that she takes to Silence in the Library...
I almost cried.
That was an excellent touch by Moffat. Because everybody's like, well... You know, obviously it's not his new Sonic, and it wasn't Matt Smith's Sonic, so where did she get this Sonic from? And now that question is answered.
Yep, exactly. So there you go. We finally got to see the final night of the Doctor and River.
Yep. And like we were saying at the top, it's maybe the last Doctor Who we see for a while. And
I hope not. I really hope not.
If you're wondering, Peter Capaldi is signed on for Season 10. We don't know who the companion is going to be yet. I'm assuming that will be announced at some point in the next year.
Could be River. You don't know.
No, it's not going to be River. Alex Kingston already said that. And it's going to be interesting. We will see what happens. Hopefully, they won't make us wait an entire year for Doctor Who. That would really suck. But it's happened before. We've had long breaks for a while. I mean, look at... During Matt Smith's run, they had that long break between, you know, Series 6 and Series 7. And
oh, yes. Yep. Not only was there a long break, but they broke up Season 7 into two parts,
yep.
And then there was a long break in between that.
Yep, so who knows? I mean, we'll see what happens, but maybe they'll do the same thing as they did there, where they break it the season in half, you know. And half in 2016 and half in 2017.
I would rather have something like that than just not have any Who at all.
Yeah. We'll see what happens, and we'll keep you advised. I know we talked about last time that we were going to review the entire season in this episode, but I think because of the length of the Star Wars segment, we're probably going to save that for episode 106.
And we'll dedicate Doctor Who to 106.
Oh, well, maybe not. We'll see, but... You know, we might have other stuff we want to talk about. Like Deadpool's going to be coming out soon.
Deadpool.
Yep. So, we'll definitely see what happens, but that's basically going to do it for this Doctor Who segment. And it also means we're going to wrap up this particular episode. If you're wondering, Mystery Science Theater 3000 did get funded.
Woohoo!
So we will have new Mystery Science Theater 3000. Keep an eye on bringbackmst3k.com for more information on that.
Well, we want to wish all our listeners a Happy New Year. We probably won't have another episode again until 2016.
But, hey, it's only a week away, so there you go.
Exactly.
And I guess that does it for now. We hope you had a very pleasant holiday. We hope you enjoyed Star Wars The Force Awakens as much as we did. And I don't know about you, but I can't wait for Episode 8. And I know you can't wait for Episode 106 of Transmissions from Atlantis. It'll come soon. Don't worry. Hopefully before Episode 8.
Oh, come on now.
All right, folks. Until next time, Elonzi.
Elonzi. And may the Force be with you.
Goodbye, everybody.
Elonzi. I should say Elonzi. Elonzi. Look sharp, Rose Tyler. Elonzi. And then, it'd be really brilliant if I met someone called Alonzo. Because then I could say Elonzi, Alonzo, every time.
A long, long time ago, in a galaxy far away, Naboo was under an attack. And I thought me and Qui-Gon Jinn could talk the Federation into maybe cutting them a little slack. But their response, it didn't thrill us. They locked the doors and tried to kill us. We escaped from that gas, then met Jar Jar and Boss Nass. We took a bongo from the scene and we went to feed to see the Queen. We all wound up on Tatooine. That's where we found this boy. Oh my, my, this here Anakin guy. Maybe Vader someday later, now he's just a small fry. And he left his home and kissed his mommy goodbye, saying soon I'm gonna be a Jedi. Soon I'm gonna be a Jedi. Did you know this junkyard slave isn't even old enough to shave? But he can use the Force, they say. Do you see him hitting on the Queen? Though he's just 9 and she's 14. Yeah, he's probably gonna marry her someday.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.